Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. My name is Richard Parker here in Auckland, New Zealand, and joining me every week is the founder of the Seagulls Down Under Supporters Club, Steve Longley. After an eventful 1-1 draw against Huddersfield, which once again felt like an opportunity missed to move closer to Premier League safety, we turn our attentions to the big derby game against Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park. Of course, after Davy Proper's red card appeal was turned down by the FA, the ever-present Dutch midfielder will be a big loss going into another relegation scrap against the old foes. So today we will be reviewing the Huddersfield game, and we have a very special guest to give us an insight on what it is like to play in the M23 derby and also come out a winner. He is an A-League grand final winner, a League One playoff final winner, an Australian Renf winner, its former Albion midfielder and Brighton's second favourite Aussie, it's Paul Reid. Welcome.
Hey guys, how are we?
You did used to be number one, you know that, right?
I don't mind going number two to Matt Ryan, it's all good.
I didn't think you'd mind. So how are you?
Yeah, very good actually. Enjoying the life in Australia, but I do miss the days in Brighton. I haven't been back since 2008, but I'm definitely planning to go back sooner rather than later. It's a bit difficult when you have a family and kids, but I'll be there soon.
I bet you don't miss the weather.
You get used to it. It's the summers in England are amazing, but obviously the winters do get very cold. So I do prefer the weather in Australia, but I had some great times in Brighton and still got friends there, still got a place there. So I'll be back there when I retire. I'll be back there during the summer months, and then I'll come back to Australia during the summer.
Excellent. For all those Albion fans that have missed you over the past 10 years, what are you doing now?
I can't believe it has been 10 years. It's gone very quickly, but over the course of that time, I came back and played in the A League for 4 or 5 years. So I went to Adelaide first, and then I played for Melbourne Heart, which is now Melbourne City, and then my last year was with Sydney FC. And then I haven't officially retired. Well, I never really did, but anyway, my last professional contract was Sydney, and then they offered me a job in the community. So I'm the community football manager at Sydney FC, and really enjoying my role there. It's something that I did while I was a player in England. I used to like going out into the community and being a bit of a role model for the kids. So, I'm doing that on a full-time basis, and then also player coach in the New South Wales MPL1 competition over here for a team called Rockdale. So you wouldn't believe it, but I'm still involved in football. So they must say that you love football, and I do. So, enjoying everything that I do over in Australia.
So, Paul, I've got your Wikipedia page open. As always, this is my research, and I'm just reading that you actually started in the same youth team as Harry Kewell and Brett Emerton.
I certainly did. We grew up playing together. So I started at the New South Wales Institute of Sports when I was 9 years of age, and Harry and Brett sort of came along when they were about 11. So we grew up playing together. From the age of about 11, we were in the state teams together. And then it's a funny old story, actually, that when Harry went over to Leeds, that was part of the Big Brother scholarship. And, well, I guess it's not that funny for me, really. But anyway, there was two of us supposed to go at the time. It was supposed to be Harry and I to go and train with Leeds as 16-year-olds for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I actually broke my ankle about a month before I was supposed to go. And then Brett Emerton went. So that's when Harry picked up his contract at Leeds. And I heard actually Leeds wanted to sign Brett as well, but he didn't have a British passport. So he couldn't sign for Leeds. But I guess things happen for a reason. I broke my ankle for a reason. I'm not sure why, but Harry obviously went on to bigger and better things, and Brett had a pretty successful career as well. So, it was a pretty successful time for that era. You know, there were some good players coming through, and I was fortunate enough to eventually become a professional footballer.
Are you still friends with Harry? Because of course Harry Kewell is now manager of Crawley, the other Sussex League team.
I can't say I'm friends really. We were actually roommates when we used to go on camps in those days when we were 11 years old, and our families met up lots of times. But then he went to England. I saw Harry when he was playing for Melbourne Victory in the A-League, and it was a bit awkward. I'm a pretty out there guy. I'm a really friendly guy. I'm a really social guy, and you know, I could tell Harry was a bit, why are you talking to me? I'm a bit better than you. Do you know what I mean?
And
it was a bit disappointing, really, because as I said, we grew up for about 5 or 6 years as really good friends, and you know, I guess people move on in their lives, but yeah, I haven't seen him since his Melbourne Victory days.
Oh, okay. Well, we won't talk about him anymore then. Let's talk about how you arrived at Brighton. Because you came over to England after playing for the Wollongong Wolves, I believe, and you joined Bradford City.
Yep, that's right. One of the board members at Wollongong knew the scout at Bolton, actually, and I went and trialled at Bolton, and I actually had a contract at Bolton. I trialled for about 4 weeks, and I actually trained out of my skin and played out of my skin, and they offered me a contract for 3 years. But Wollongong Wolves asked for too much money as a transfer fee. They had agreed a fee, and...
Do you know how much?
I'll tell you. I'm just trying to think that the time it was. It was 2001, mm-hmm. So obviously the league in Australia wasn't that established. And they had agreed a fee of four lots of £50,000. So it had been agreed for £200,000. So which was 500,000 Australian dollars at the time. Mm. In those days, it was quite a bit of money.
That's a pretty decent fee, actually.
Yeah, and then so they had agreed the four lots of payments to come through, but then last minute Wollongong said to Bolton, "No, we want the £200,000 up front." And Bolton said, "Well, no, we've agreed." And then Bolton just took the deal off the table. Mm. So I've spoken to the guy who organised the trial for me, and he told me it about 10 years later. And he said, "Look, I've been meaning to tell you this the whole time, but I've never seen you." So I was pretty disappointed. But anyway, Bradford saw me in a game when I was trialling for Bolton, and then I signed for Bradford for 2 years. And then... wasn't getting much game time at Bradford when Brian Robson became manager. And then Dick Knight actually saw me when I was playing in the reserves for Bradford against Stoke. They went to see another player, a striker, Chris, you know, Chris Iwulumu, how do you say his surname?
Chris Iwulumu, I think.
Yeah, they went to see Chris. And then I remember Dick Knight saying to Michael Standing, who was at Bradford at the time, he said, "Who's that midfielder? He's the best player on the park." And he was talking about me. And then a couple of months later, I'd signed for Brighton when we got promoted. That year we got promoted. So that's how the Brighton deal came along.
And, of course, you ended up in the playoff final side with Chris Iwulumu, who won the penalty,
yep,
actually. We'll talk about that in a minute. So you joined Brighton and Hove Albion. You've come down to see our fantastic athletic stadium. What did you think of it?
It was interesting. I was a good athlete in my day, so I was doing a few 100-meter sprints in my warm-up. But
at least it came in useful, that track.
I was actually a good long jumper in the day too, actually. I won the state long jump and went to the national titles. But I didn't really want to go to... I didn't want to be signing for Brighton and seeing an athletics track. But it's, you know, everyone knows about Withdean. The atmosphere wasn't great, just because the supporters were so far back. But, you know, I really enjoyed playing for Brighton. You know, it was a really memorable time for my career. And, you know, it's great now that they've got an amazing stadium like the Amex.
So when you came in, was it Mark McGee that brought you in?
It certainly was. Yep, it was Mark McGee.
And what was it like playing under Mark McGee?
No, He was actually very good. You know, he and Bob Booker was the assistant at the time, and we actually had a really good squad, and we had a really good team. And I came to Brighton and we actually got promoted that year, as you said, and Bradford, who I had left, actually was the team, one of the teams that got relegated. So I did well. I left Bradford, who were in the Championship, and they got relegated, and I came to Brighton, they got promoted. So, you know, we had 2 years in the Championship, and Mark McGee, I enjoyed my time under Mark McGee. You know, I really developed as a player, and, you know, as I said, we had some successful seasons, but, you know, the last 2 years, we obviously got relegated down to League One, but, you know, as I said, I really developed under Mark McGee.
Obviously, it was quite an eventful season, as you said. We did get promoted through the playoffs. There was a few standout games, one being the second leg against Swindon in the playoff semi-final, where we scored in the last minute to take the game to penalties. Number one, sorry for my poor reconnaissance, but did you play in that game?
I did start in that game, and it wasn't one of my best games, to be honest. I actually got taken off. I remember I was starting at right midfield. We were playing 4-4-2. Like Mark McGee liked to play, and I'm not. If anyone knows me as a player, I'm not really a right midfielder. I'm not the sort of player to use my pace and take on players. But Richard Carpenter and Charlie Oatway had cemented their place in the centre of midfield, so I actually took Gary Hart's spot for the last few games of the season. But as I said, it wasn't one of my best games. I got taken off. Gary came on, and then Gary started in the playoff final. So. You know, but I do remember it vividly, sitting on the sideline, sitting on the bench, and the way that game finished. You know, it was a great introduction to my life at Brighton.
Incredible euphoria when Adam Virgo scored. If you'd been playing, would you have fancied a penalty?
Definitely not. I'm not the sort of person to take a penalty.
No, fair enough. At least you're honest.
Yeah, I took one in the old National Soccer League grand final for Wollongong, and I scored. I was actually the ninth penalty taker in that game. So
what's numbers?
You can imagine. I was only 20 at the time. We actually won the shootout. I scored and then they missed because it was sudden death and we won. But I remember that day there was only two central defenders left who hadn't taken penalties and myself. Mm-hmm. So I thought I've got to step up now, even though I was 20, and I just picked the spot and put it in, but I wasn't that confident. So, you know, in terms of taking penalties and stepping up, I'm not that sort of person.
Fair enough. But you did score a last-minute equaliser in that game.
I did as well, yeah. I scored the equaliser to make it 3-0, and we were down 3-0 to make it 3-all, sorry. We were down 3-0 at halftime. So,
oh, what a comeback.
Yeah, as I said, it was a long time ago. It was nearly 20 years ago. It was 18 years ago now, so... Yeah, but as I said, it was a nice way to start my career at Wollongong anyway.
Let's bring in Steve. Steve, how's it going?
Yeah, hi, Richard. Hi, Paul.
Just memories of that semi-final win, Steve. Did you go to the game or were you in Australia at that point?
No, I was at that game, yeah. The euphoria when Adam scored was just unbelievable, wasn't it? You know, you had...
The pitch invasion, unbelievable, yeah, really. Yeah. Never seen a pitch invasion, and then everyone came on.
I think Bob Booker was practically doing cartwheels up the sideline.
Yep.
Yeah, it was great.
And then come to the penalty shootout. My favourite thing about the penalty shootout after we'd won is just watching Mark McGee run probably as fast as he's ever done in his life for the changing rooms before he got mobbed. He didn't run very fast, to be fair.
He's actually got a very distinctive running style, Mark McGee, doesn't he, eh?
Considering he was a pacey striker, you thought he would have run a bit faster.
No, he wanted to get mobbed. I'm sure he wanted to get mobbed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and so we're moving on to the playoff final. Obviously, it wasn't a particularly good game, but we didn't care. We won the game with a Leon Knight penalty. What was it like to play alongside Leon Knight?
He was actually a really good striker. You know, obviously he was only small, but you know when he had a big man off him, then that he could run off. He was really prolific, and you know, everyone knows the sort of character Leon Knight is. He thinks he's the best player on the park all the time, and he's arrogant. But you know, there were games where it really showed, and you know, he was a talented striker. He probably should have done more in his career, but and I guess the attitude side of things probably stopped him from going further in his career, but. You know, in terms of his goal-scoring record, especially at Brighton, you can't complain.
Especially that season. I mean, he was on fire. And that was the first season I think he signed for us permanently. I think we had him on loan before. But he really fired us to that playoff final, without a doubt. And when Chris Uwolumu came in, they actually formed a bit of a partnership towards the end of that season.
Yeah, they certainly did. And I guess that's why they were looking at him halfway through the season to bring a guy like that into the team. So they did complement each other, which was great. And, you know, they were prolific together. So, yeah, it was a bit like the old Niall Quinn and Kevin Phillips days.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, the big and small guy. So, the following season, we had a couple of seasons in the Championship. Unfortunately, you suffered a knee injury in the 2006 season, was it?
It was. It was away to Carlisle. I remember that very clearly. We had actually flown up to Carlisle, the first time we'd ever flown to a game. And I don't think we flew in my 4.5 years that I was at Brighton. But
I'm surprised we could afford it.
Yeah, I don't know why we flew, actually. It was a midweek game, and I did it. I remember doing it after about 25 minutes. I actually stayed on for about 5 or 10 minutes, and I remember saying to our physio that my knee just feels funny, you know, and I didn't know. So I played on, and I remember going up for a header after I'd done it, and it just buckled again on me, and I just said, look, you've got to get me off. And it wasn't even that bad. I wasn't even in any pain. But then by the time we had landed at Gatwick, it had blown up like a balloon. So
what was the diagnosis? I knew I'd done.
It was an ACL. Yeah, I was out for 6 months with that. And, you know, yeah, that was the – I remember that was about October 2006. I did that. So I didn't come back until the following season. It was a bit too soon, really. But I was training and playing in the reserves before the end of that season.
And then you got released in July 2008 and decided to go and play back in Australia?
Yeah, I certainly did. Obviously, yeah, it was Dean Wilkins was the manager at the time. And he released a few of us. But I knew my time was coming. You know, you can tell because I was always getting shifted in positions and I never was. I wanted to play centre midfield and I was never given the opportunity to play centre midfield on a regular basis. You know, I liked actually being versatile when I was first at Brighton because I played at right back. I played left back when Kerry Mayo was injured. As I said before, I was playing right midfield initially and I got released. And I thought at the time there were a couple of offers in Australia. I didn't know much about the A-League, but I did a bit of research and I thought, you know what, now might be the time to head back. So I took a bit of a gamble to go back to Australia. And within 4 months of being back in Australia, I had played for the Socceroos. So it was actually a good move for me, really. But, my first game was away in Thailand. No, it wasn't. What am I thinking? I was Indonesia. Sorry, how can I remember my first game? Yeah, it was Indonesia. I remember it was about 42 degrees. There was about 80,000 Indonesians. It was a 0-0 draw, but it was just one of those. It was one of those really tough games where it was part of the Asian Cup. It was an Asian Cup qualifier. So, but yeah, I just remember that people were dropping like flies and people were going down with cramp, and I wasn't surprised because it was so humid there.
I'm looking at your Wikipedia page again, and I see you played for a side called NC Police United.
Police United.
Of Thailand.
Yep.
So how did that come about?
So basically I came back to Australia, as you said, in 2008, played for Adelaide United for 3 seasons, and then came back to Sydney, and my agent at the time said, oh, don't worry about it, Sydney FC will want to sign you, and nothing happened for about 6 months. Then I actually had a contract in Iran, of all places. You will probably laugh. Iran, I know.
Wow.
I was a bit apprehensive going. But
I'm not
I had
surprised.
Nothing. Yeah, I had nothing at the time, and I thought, you know what? It's 6 months. It was a six-month contract, and I thought, you know what? I'll just do it for the family, you know, just because it was good money, and I thought, I'll just go over there. I left Sydney on the Sunday, and I was back in Sydney on the Thursday.
It was that bad then.
Yeah, I got over there, and the place that I was supposed to be staying at was it was a small village. The team the team weren't too bad, but the, you know, there was no internet connection. There was no, I couldn't even ring home, you know? Mm. So I thought, I can't do this for 6 months. So I basically had to make a bit of a story to get out of there, because I actually felt a bit scared. It was quite intimidating. Mm. And it was the sort of place where, well, part of my contract, I was supposed to be giving various parties part of my contract. So these are the sorts of things you deal with as a footballer, you know? Mm-hmm. So the people that were trying to keep me in Iran were the ones that were obviously getting paid, you know, from the club. So I couldn't do it. So I came back, and then that's when I signed for Melbourne City, about a couple of months later. And after that, I was there for 8 weeks as an injury replacement. And then the Thailand thing came up because my old assistant coach at Adelaide was the coach there. And you know what? The Thai League, there are some good teams in the Thai League, but it's very unprofessional.
Right.
And, you know, players would turn up late to training, an hour into training, and they'd just rock up and start playing on the field, and the coach wouldn't even say anything.
Oh, right. So it's quite Sunday League kind of thing.
Yeah, 100%. And it was like, I would say to the players, oh, why are you late? And they go, oh, traffic in Bangkok, it's very bad. And I think, well, if I can get there on time, I'm sure you could. So, yeah, I lasted there about 6 months.
Yeah.
And then came back and signed for Sydney FC. And that was my last year of the of my career. So that's cool. How the Thailand thing came up there. As I said, the Adelaide assistant coach was the coach, and he wanted me to play over there.
It's interesting. We spoke to Lloyd Owusu last week, and he had a story about when he went to the Chinese League. And that didn't last very long either. Okay, Paul. So let's talk about your favourite Albion game.
Yeah, obviously the playoff final was memorable because it was, I still remember it, you know, played at the Millennium Stadium. Brighton were obviously blue and white. Bristol City were red and white. It's, you know, it was the contrast in colours in the stadium was amazing. And then I remember clearly within 5 minutes of the final whistle, there was no red and white in the stadium. It was just blue and white. Mm. So, you know, that obviously is a memorable game for me. You know, the Tottenham game in the FA Cup, you know, not many people get to play against the Premier League team in the FA Cup, and we managed to do that at White Hart Lane.
And we did well.
Exactly right. We put in a good performance. We're actually unlucky because I remember Robbie Keane scored an absolute bomb to make it 2-1.
Richard Carpenter scored a free kick in that game, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right in front of us.
Richard Carpenter did score to make it 1-1. But yeah, you know, people do say about it. I'm not just saying it because it's the Crystal Palace game coming up, but I remember playing at Selhurst Park. I didn't really realise the rivalry between Brighton and Crystal Palace until we were going to the game and players were saying to me, do you realise this is one of the biggest games for the club? And I said, all right, what? Yeah, and they explained. So, just Selhurst Park being a tight stadium, you know, it's really close. The supporters are there. We had a good contingent of away supporters, as you can imagine. And to come away with a 1-0 win was unbelievable. I remember celebrating with the supporters over in the corner. And I had so many calls after the game saying, we're in pubs, we're celebrating, we're giving the Palace supporters stick. People were on trains, getting the train back to Brighton. And they were saying, they're just singing. It was so loud. So, you know, it was the game against Palace at Selhurst, yeah, definitely was a highlight.
When you were at Selhurst Park and you were on the pitch just before the kickoff, did you get a sense of the importance of the game through the atmosphere?
Yeah, 100%. I remember, I think I played left back that game from memory. I know I was either right back or left back, but I remember, I'm sure I was left back because Kerry was injured. But yeah, just standing there and you can just feel it, you know? I know. That's the good thing about a lot of stadiums in England, that when they're really close and it's just a traditional stadium, you know, it's the atmosphere is amazing. But you could just sense there was something special about that night. And wasn't the greatest goal that we scored. Paul McShane would claim it, but I don't know if it was I don't know if he got a touch or it was an own goal. But anyway, it was 1-0. So, you know, obviously it was a great game for us. But then, you know, for the supporters, you always like to do it for the supporters as well, especially in a big derby.
So you talk about the goal. So you think it was more of an own goal?
Yeah, from memory, I don't know what everyone else thinks, but I don't know. Yeah, I just remember at the time thinking Paul McShane, he's off celebrating, but I don't even think he really knew much about it.
Steve, you were at the game. What was your opinion?
Yeah, well, I was too far away to see it, but I mean, I know Paul McShane obviously claimed it, but Paul, we've got another person that was at that ground on that evening. He once played Darth Vader to your Paul Hogan. Hello, Guy Butters.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Hello, yeah, Butts.
Not too bad.
How are you, Paul? What, really? See that?
Hello, Hello, champion. Haven't spoken to you for 10 years, my friend.
Yeah, I know. Hope you're well, mate.
Yeah, you too. How are you going?
Yeah, I still work at the club, so I'm still doing all right, mate. I work on the community scheme at the club now, so...
I did know that. Let's talk about the West Ham game, mate. When we beat West Ham, mate, you scored, eh? Let's talk about that one.
Yeah.
Well,
we're coming. Hang on, fellas. Hang on.
Oh, we're jumping the gun, eh?
Actually, you know what? Speaking about that, that was another game, mate. So, talking about a highlight, Danny Cullip vomited on the way into the change room, and then Guy Butter scores the winner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good days, mate. Good days.
I'll tell you a little story about that guy. I was in the front row behind the goal, just where you were celebrating with the fans when you scored. And I don't know if you managed to see this guy, but there was a guy standing next door to me right in the front row going absolutely ballistic, waving this betting slip. And he's going, I've just won £50, guy. I've just won £50.
And 40 to 1.
You went off and he's... I've looked at him and I've gone, what's all that about then? He goes, oh, I just bet on Guy Butters to score the winner every game.
How many people say that to me over the years? I mean, I'd be funny to find a little 10% of it. You know what I mean? Got to come my way, a little pint.
He's out of pocket, mate. He's out of pocket.
I bet.
Okay, so let's formally introduce Guy. Guy, thanks for joining us on the Albion Roar Down Under. It's great to hear from you. So back to that Palace game. What were your feelings about the game? Did you get a sense of this could be the day we could actually win when you went into that game?
Yeah, I think as Reedy says, you know, because we weren't associated with the club really. We're not really fans of the club, but we've both played in sort of derbies anyway throughout our careers. So we know the importance of what it means to the fans. And sort of the build up to it, I think we went and had a pre-match meal at a hotel on the way. And I remember one of their players, a foreign lad, I can't think of his name now, but he was in the hotel at the time. And he kept nipping out to have a cigarette. It was quite weird. And I was kept thinking, okay. That was a bit strange. And when we got to the ground, I saw he was in the starting 11. And luckily for us, I think it's Andy Johnson. He wasn't playing. I saw him in the tunnel. And I asked him if he was playing, and he said no. And it was sort of a little bit of bit of relief come over me, really, because I know he's, you know, very good forward. He was sort of in and around the England team at the time. And I sort of, you know, so that was a bit of a relief that he wasn't playing. But you could tell in the tunnel that the lads, you know, we had a good bunch of lads at the time, as Reedy said before. You know, we had a lot of players, Chippy was playing. You know, we had a good bunch of players playing there that had been at Brighton for a number of years. And so you always knew that, you know, we, one thing that you guarantee with that team that we would compete. We weren't just going to go out and make up numbers. And I think, you know, as the game goes on and you sort of keep in a clean sheet and then all of a sudden you can hear a couple of murmurings in their crowd, I think it gives you a bit more confidence, you know, and then you've sort of kept another clean sheet for another 10 minutes and then it spurs you on a little bit more. And then all of a sudden, as Reedy said, I think it was an own goal myself, you know, we scored, and that sort of, you know, the feeling that you get through scoring, and then you know you've got something to defend then for the rest of the game. And I think sort of towards 20 minutes to go, I think it was a bit of an Alamo situation. You know, they kept putting forwards on and bombing forward, but we managed to hold out, and celebrations afterwards were brilliant. I remember running over, as we said, towards the fans. I think I've got a picture somewhere at home with celebrating with me and Jake Robinson and Adam Alab, and it was a great feeling.
As a centre-back, when you're in a game like that and you're under the cosh for most of the game, but then you go and score, with the last sort of, what, I think it was 76 minutes or something like that, the last 15 minutes, you think, right, they're really going to have a go at us now. I've got to keep that concentration. And especially as a, you know, one of the senior players there, do you sort of turn around to some of the youngsters and go, right, come on, let's go, we're going to do this, try and spur them on?
Yeah, you do sort of, you know, a little bit responsibly comes in you as a bit of a senior pro. But to be fair, a lot of the players by then, even Jake Robinson had played a number of games, same with Adam Alab, you know, a bit of experience under their belts as well. But, yeah, it's just a case of, you know, being solid, make sure that I think we dropped a little bit deeper that game, obviously, tried to nullify the pace up front. So we just kept everyone in front of us, and we just had two barriers of four and just really hard to break down. I don't really recall them having too many sort of outright chances. I think, we were sort of pretty solid that game. So
especially the left side backs. I think we were really solid, eh? We had a lot of pace down that left side butts. Don't worry about it.
I think it was because of the covering that you received from the left side centre half. Might have done it. I've listened to the stuff you've been saying, and as you said, you're a great player, because what we liked about Reedy was the fact that he could play in a number of positions, and the best thing about it as well is the ultimate pro that you were. You never complained once. You just got on and done it with aplomb. And it's players like that, gold dust in a team. Especially for a manager, if someone goes injured and he's struggling for a player to fit in that position, to have a utility player that can go in, slot in there and look really comfortable is absolute gold dust for a manager.
After you say that, Butts, and that was the disappointing thing for me when I wasn't offered something at Brighton, that the reason Dean Wilkins said I wasn't offered a contract, he actually said to me, you haven't made one position your own. And it's like, well, do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to play centre midfield. That was the disappointing thing about leaving Brighton, because I really loved my time at Brighton and I wanted to stay.
Yeah, I mean, I got released at 38. I think Harty and Terry got released at the same time as well.
Yeah.
When Mickey Adams came in and took over, he brought Kerry and Harty back. I think, personally, from looking back at the time at the club of that era there, Dean Wilkins had made his mind up that he wanted to fill most of the team. And I've heard since then that he wanted to fill most of the team with Sussex-born players, young lads that had come through the ranks. So that went against you massively. And I think, like I said, as soon as Mickey came in, he rectified that he thought that Dean had made a mistake, or whether it had been Dick Knight probably had a hand in that as well, by getting Kerry and Harty back. And I'm not sure where you were at the time, whether you'd gone home or not, but I'm pretty sure that if Dick Knight would have had his way, you would have come back as well.
Mickey Adams actually called me, and I trained. I came back in July and trained for about a week. But as I said, I was quite advanced with the Australia thing. I think Mickey at the time also thought it won't look great as well, bringing him back. So, as I said, nothing against Mickey Adams. I was actually happy that he actually wanted me to... He actually had a bit of faith in me. But as I said, I had made up my mind at that time that now was the time to go back to Australia. I was only 29, but, as I said, I'd made up my mind.
That just goes to show that there's politics in football that people probably don't understand. And, that was one of them. I definitely knew that there was a phase of... he wanted a lot of Sussex-born players that come through the ranks, because obviously he was youth team manager before he took over the reins. And I think you look at that team that he was trying to get into the 11. I think at the start in 11, one stage there was probably eight Sussex-born players that come through the ranks. So it just spoke volumes.
This is the Albion Raw Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. OK, Paul, thanks for joining us. Now, I know you've got to go training now, so it's been awesome to reminisce some great stories while you're at the Albion, especially the Crystal Palace game. Just a quick last question. Do you follow the Albion at the moment? Are you managing to watch any games?
I certainly do. I keep track. I'm, someone actually asked me the other day, because I was a Liverpool supporter. I still am a Liverpool supporter, but a young kid said to me, "Oh, who do you support in the Premier League?" I said, "Brighton." And then I said, "Oh, my second team's Liverpool." So, I've been following. So, as I said, I know how important the game is this weekend against Palace. I think the media guys at Brighton spoke to me during the week, and I said, you pick up 3 points in this game and you're nearly there.
Mm.
You could even be there with 38 points. So,
do you think,
at the start of the year, that would have been their main focus to stay in the Premier League, and they've put themselves in a great position. So, I'm hoping they pick up the necessary points to stay in the Premier League, because it'd be great for a club like Brighton.
Okay, Paul. Awesome to speak to you. Thanks for joining us on the Albion Raw Down Under.
Thanks for having me, guys, and cheers. Nice to chat, Butts. We'll chat soon.
No worries, mate. All the best, really.
All right, guys. So let's talk a bit more about that Crystal Palace game. Now, that was the one and only time we wore that special white kit. It was a bit of a collector's item. I bought that kit and thinking that was really cool, and I don't think I ever wore it.
I can't forget that kit. I hated it because, obviously, being the size I am, everyone else who had the lovely beach-toned bodies, they really loved it because it was skin tight, whereas I've got the old beer belly hanging out. It was a great thing, but sort of get shoehorned out of it. I mean, it was a one-off kit. I think I remember me going through the first half. I think it was Chippy went in for a challenge, got cut, and he had to, all the blood went on his top and his shorts, so he had to go off and have a blood change. And I think one of the local magazines, like a Loaded magazine or something, had took a picture of him in his pants at the side of the pitch.
Nice.
And it made the magazine in there. And it was great. You know, absolute superb kit. Obviously, 100% record in it. So it was, I was pretty sure that it was a collector's item.
Steve touched on it in your intro about the fancy dress party. Now, I wanted to talk about that when you were both there, but just Reedy's left now, but just tell us about that fancy dress party.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, we used to do quite a few things like that. I remember, I think it was the previous year or the year after, I got dressed up as a boxman. There was quite a few emus in there, but the Darth Vader one, yeah, I mean, it was quite good. It seemed a good idea at the time, but then obviously I've got to walk around the rest of the night with Darth Vader's helmet on, which, you know, when you're going into nightclubs and that's quite hot. I think it was Paul Watson as well, dressed up in a big, massive, giant bunny costume, and he struggled as well, because, I mean, you can imagine being in that all night. So, it was really good. I remember one of the boys as well at the time, I think it was Chris May, who I think played out in Australia, one of the young lads who was a goalkeeper at the time.
Oh, yep.
And,
yep.
Chris May, he's here, he's in Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah, he kept telling everyone that he was seeing Kelly Brook. And, the page three girl. Mm. And all the lads are like, don't be silly. And he turned up with her, fair enough.
No!
So, of course, he turned up with her, which was, you know, quite amazing. Good, for a young pro, that was quite impressive. All the lads were quite impressed by that.
so, were they an item?
He said he was seeing her, and she was there with her mate, and he was talking to her. So, I assumed that if he said that she was coming along and it... I don't know if it was actually, you know, official, but he definitely brought her along, and he spent most of the night with her in the nightclubs and that. So yeah, we were pretty impressed by that, and I made sure that day that the old that couple of minutes where the old helmet come off, so I could let her have a little look at the old money shot. But yeah, unfortunately, I had no chance.
Oh, Guy, you know, this is community radio. This is going...
I remember walking back to the hotel, though, after a couple of beers, and might even been with Reedy, actually, and I walked into some scaffolding because I couldn't see anything with the helmet on. So I walked in the crowd. I'd be a fight. Quite eventful.
I was actually there at the marina that night, and... Bobby got invited, didn't he? He came down after his West
End. Yeah.
Myself and Bobby were in the toilets. I don't know if you remember, in those toilets in those days, they used to have the aftershave.
Yeah.
And Adam had one too many, came into the toilets, picked up a bottle of Cool Ross and sprayed it all over myself and Bobby standing at the urinals. Honestly, we came out of there smelling like bloody Tubbs and Crockett from the 80s.
What was he dressed as, Adam? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember. I can remember Charlie sitting on the throne all night. Remember that chair that was like a throne?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was sat on there all night and everyone was buying him G&T or something.
Was
I can't remember.
Freddie Mercury. I think he dressed as Freddie Mercury, didn't he?
So, Guy, Steve has asked me to ask you about the incident when Leon Knight got kicked off the bus by Mark McGee.
I think we were playing Southampton away. And I think we had a keeper from France. I remember his name was Flo.
Was it Shaneu? That was his name, was it? Something, yeah. Shaneu or something like that. Florence Shaneu?
Florence. And... I think we'd done a team talk at the hotel, and Michelle had been left out in case instead of this flow. So he was best pleased. And I remember getting on the coach, and it was basically Michelle sort of, you know, sort of saying, I can't believe it and all this stuff. And it was, you know, we were sort of, part of you felt a bit sorry for him, but part of you wanted to just concentrate on the game coming up.
Yeah.
And I think it was getting a bit vocal, and I think Mark McGee sort of could hear it. And I think he sort of just turned around and, you know, just like calmed down sort of thing. And then I think Leon might have mentioned something. And I think Mark McGee just took a bit of umbrage to say, what's he got to do with you? One of them sort of, you know, one in chats, and neither backed down. So I think just a little bit of a little tit for tat, you know, a couple of little words were said backwards and forwards. And I think in the end, Mark just thought, well, I'm not putting up with this. We've got a game and that. Get off, sort of thing. Make the coach driver stop at the gates and say, get off, make your own way there. And Leon went, I ain't getting off. So I think, I'm not sure, I assume Leon was down to play, down to start, obviously. And then I'm assuming that by the time we got to the ground, I'm pretty much sure that must have changed. And I don't know if he was on the bench or not even on the bench. But, yeah, that's all it was. It was just one of them little silly little, neither side was backing down, you know, shut up. And no, why should I shut up? One of them things, you know. But originally, it was nothing to do with, it wasn't anything to do with Leon playing or anything like that. It was to do, I think it was to do with Michelle being left out and, you know, sort of venting his frustration on the bus a little bit. You know, from Mark's point of view, it was like, you know, why are you getting involved? You know what I mean? If the player's sort of unhappy, it's down to the player to come and see me sort of thing, you know, whether it be before the game, preferably after the game, or if not on the Monday morning when we come back into training, you know, knock on the manager's door and inquire as to why you're not playing. But, you know, it's sometimes, you know, as a player, when you get dropped, it's not the best feeling in the world, but part of you, depending on how you feel about things, you know, your teammates are all on the bus, they've got a game coming up. You know, the last thing I wanted to hear was someone complaining that they're not playing when I'm trying to concentrate on who I'm going to be marking, who I'm picking up from set pieces and what's happening for corners, etc. So it can be off-putting at times. But, yeah, so I think that was, you know, one of them cases where it just sort of reached a little bit of a, got a bit too loud, and I think Mark tried to get control of it. And like I say, I think he felt that Leon got involved when it wasn't really too much to do with him. But yeah, that, like I say, them sort of things happen, you know, a couple of times a week at football. So there's no, you know, there's no real, wasn't there any real great shakes for the players. It was more someone found out about it, I assume, and put it all over North Stand chat or whatever they did. And people made a lot out of it. But yeah, I think it was all sort of dealt with pretty quickly.
Okay, guys, so moving on. So you're now working for the club in the community. Tell us a little about what your role is there at the moment.
There's me and Danny Cullett, former captain of the Seagulls as well. We both work on the BTEC side of things. And we've got students that have just left school trying to do a diploma in sport. And what they do is they train three times a week at the training ground. And then we play on a Wednesday and a Friday against other community schemes. Me and Danny do, we train the lads. We've also got a futsal team, which is the indoor five-a-side teams. So Danny takes that team, I take the 11-a-side team. And then they go back in the afternoons and do their schoolwork in the back at the Amex in the classrooms there with the teachers. And then when they do that, me and Danny then switch on to do a bit of fundraising. We go out and meet companies and try and raise funds. We get involved in organising charity events, football matches on the pitch at the end of the season, tournaments, etc. Lots of stuff for the disability unit, lots of stuff for the health department. Yeah, so it's all good, really. We're full-time, me and Danny, so it's working really well. And we're getting involved this year in an annual bike ride that Albion Community put on. I've done it for the last 3 years. Danny's first year this year. We're going to Cologne this year, so we get involved in getting people along as well and just raising funds for the community scheme.
I don't know about other football teams, but Brighton seem to be very loyal to players who have been good servants to them over the years and reward them with jobs within the club.
Yeah, they're, at one stage, I mean, we had Michelle worked on there, Harty, Kerry, Charlie obviously worked on there, Chippy worked on there. So we did have quite a few. There's only me and Danny left now that work there now. Paul Rogers worked there at one stage in the marketing department, and I think Paul Watson was physio there. They've left now. So it's like I say, something me and Danny really that's still there working on the community scheme. But I think that stemmed from the days when Dick Knight was there. I think he sort of, the years that we had it with Dean, I think he felt that he had a certain type of player that came in, you know, to the club that had the attitude that the boys did. And I think he liked that to go out into the community scheme. I think he sort of had that, he saw it as the Brighton way, and he had a bunch of people there that he knew that he could trust, and he knew that would go in there and not muck about, you know, and really sell the club and sell the community scheme. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, respected us as players, and I think that that was the idea behind that. And like I say, it's sort of gone on from there when obviously Tony's come in now and he's a massive backer of Albion community. And it's gone from strength to strength. I think we keep winning awards left, right and centre every year. And I thoroughly enjoy it. It's brilliant. I mean, the amount of work that goes on in Sussex from Albion community, I don't think a lot of people are aware of. You know, we're out there week in, week out in a number of schools. Like I say, we've got six, I think, different departments where we're in health, disability, social inclusion as well. We do a lot of kicks projects to get kids that are in trouble, you know, with the police, etc., get them involved in sport, and it works quite well.
So you're in and around Brighton at the moment. It must be a hell of a buzz going around the team. First Premier League season, we're, you know, doing fantastically well. 13th, 7 points clear of relegation. Do you get a sense that, you know, this year we will survive?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I think, you know, the Arsenal game where we won, I think it's a massive result for us, because without that, I think, you know, probably would have been a little bit more wobbly. But I think, yeah, I think I've looked at the performances the last few games. There's a little bit of nervousness, I think, in there, but I think we'd be fine. I still think that we'd do well Saturday. And I think we've got another Arsenal result in us. I really do. I think the way that we've been playing, you know, the attacking style of football that we've been playing, we've been unlucky, really, that we've, you know, given away a couple of sloppy goals in the last few games. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that we've got another Arsenal result in us, and I'm more than confident that we've got enough in there to survive this year, certainly. And, you know, obviously with the staying in that Premier League paramount, and I think you get an excellent amount of money again for the following season. So fingers crossed that, you know, it will lead on to staying in that Premier League for a number of years to come.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we're almost out of time, Guy, but I've got some quick fire questions for you. Now, they don't, because I know you've played for a number of sides over your long, distinguished career, so they don't have to be Brighton related. Yeah. So just quickly.
Not in Iran, though. None of them are in Iran.
So you haven't got an impressive overseas story. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'd like the South End, probably Iran light.
Okay, favourite game that you played in?
Probably, as Reedy said, probably the playoff final. I think that was, you know, just to play in front of that big crowd and see the amount of fans that turned up. And I don't think it was a great game to watch, but to be involved in it, they're always quite cagey affairs. No one really wants to give anything away. But for the atmosphere and the actual relation of getting promoted, I think that game, obviously the West Ham game, scoring that goal, stick long in my memory.
Would that be your favourite goal?
Yeah, definitely. Because my old man's a West Ham fan, so I think felt like he'd lost a tenner and found a fiver that day. and also the Tottenham game, obviously going back to where I started off my career. And for the day, I was made captain. Charlie Oakway very kindly said to the gaffer, you know, make him captain. This is old club. So I had the honour of leading the team out, and I got a lovely photo at home of me and Ledley King at the coin toss. So yeah, it's brilliant, great day. Unfortunately about the result.
Yeah. Favourite teammate?
Teammate? Oh yeah. God, I've got so many. You know, to be fair, like I said before, you can't pick anyone out. They were all, we had a real good team spirit there. It was, you know, you had Charlie Chippy in front of me and Danny Cullett. You had Michelle Kuipers behind us with Ben Watson playing as well. People like Reedy. We had a lot of young lads coming through. Dan Arden, etc. Kerry and RE playing, you know, they've cut the characters as well. With Leon scoring the goals up front alongside Chris Ullulumu, maybe Fergs when he played the following season up front, scoring goals for fun. We just had a great, great team spirit. It was really good. It was pleasing to be in that era still where you could play football, but still you were allowed still to go in the bar after and have a pint. You know what I mean? So it was not like nowadays where it's all about, you know, obviously you haven't recovered and all this stuff, but you could go in the players' lounge and have a pint after the game and have a chat about the game, and that brought a real togetherness, really.
It's all very scientific now, isn't it? It sort of gets a lot, that kind of camaraderie kind of gets lost a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, shame that Reedy had to go, because there was the lad that does the lounges. I do a lounge hosting on a match day, so I get to watch all the home games. And a couple of the stewards that are there as well, they were stewards from the Wolfdean days, and they always say, well, I know one of them comes over and sees Reedy quite regular, and they always say that they felt that it was the best time for the club, because we literally, you know, we're all in it together, stewards, players, fans, everyone, staff. You know, we parked at the car park at the Wolfdean, walked through the pub or around the side of the pub, stopped to chat with all the fans and stopped to chat with all the stewards. And I think that's what gets missing nowadays, where, you know, the lads are in sort of early at 11:30 now to have pre-match meals, so they don't really get to see too many people. And it's a bit of a shame, really, but I do understand it. It's moved on. But I think at the time, I think if you talk to quite a few fans and quite a few people that work at the club or have worked at the club, I think they find that although the Wolfdean wasn't the greatest of stadiums, I think it brought a real togetherness with everyone in it together.
Okay, last question. Be honest. Least favourite teammate, and it doesn't have to be a Brighton player. Who annoyed you the most in any team you played in?
I can't really think of too many people that I've really not got on with. But yeah, it's probably the players that, as Reedy said before, could possibly have gone on to had really good careers if they'd have just concentrated on it a bit more and maybe put a bit more effort in. I remember when Mark McGee first came to the club, he sort of pulled me because I played against Mark McGee's teams throughout my career, being at Julian, and I played against Millwall, played against Reading, and he said to me, I'm really the only player really that he sort of remembers playing against. And because he knew I was an older pro, he said, I want to bounce a few ideas off of you. So I said, yeah, no problem. And then so I thought, well, I better get him. I've obviously had situations throughout my career where people thought, you know, big lad, all this stuff. So I sort of pulled him and said, is there any way you can help me in my career? And he got me in on a course of getting into the gym before training and pounding me out on a treadmill, doing power walking, etc. I lost a lot of weight. Started to play quite well. But it took a certain attitude in me to do that, if you know what I mean. And I'm that sort of player that would have done it. Whereas I know a lot of players that were asked to do certain things, they wouldn't do it. And probably to the detriment of their career. So players like that, really, where you think, you know, you're a professional. If someone asks you to do it, do it. You know, that's part of your job. Mm-hmm. Players that I think that could have extended their careers or probably could have had better careers but couldn't be bothered or just thought that they knew better. Yeah, them sort of players, really. Couldn't really single anyone out in that, but there's been a few players down, you know, where I've sort of looked at people and thought, have you actually looked away from that club knowing deep in your heart that you've given everything, that you've done everything possible to A, earn a pro contract, or B, earn another contract, or get into the team? But there's some people that I can, you know, only probably name them or numbers on one hand, but there's certainly been down my career players that I think that if they'd just worked it a bit harder and got their nut down a little bit more, could have gone on to have really good careers.
Absolutely. Okay, Guy, so finally, let's look forward to the game at the weekend. What's your prediction for the game against Crystal Palace?
I think the longer we go there, similar to the game when we played, I think if you go there and you keep it tight for 20 minutes, half an hour, I think their crowd will start to turn a little bit because of the position that they're in. I think that's the key to it. I think if you concede an early goal, and because they're quite vocal at home, Crystal Palace fans, I think that they'll get behind their team. I think if we nick an early goal, or like I said, keep a clean sheet for a good, you know, half hour, I could see them start to turn on one or two of their players. And when you're down there, it's so hard. It's all of a sudden you can hear the crowd murmuring and start getting on your back. It takes a very special kind of player to sort of turn that round. So I think I'm pretty sure keep it tight in the first half hour. If it's 0-0 after half an hour, I see us going on to win the game 1-0.
Well, I also think that they have to beat us. We don't have to beat them. A draw for us is a good result. Yeah. We need to keep them at 3 points distance. So the pressure will be all on them. I reckon they'll go at us in the first 10-15 minutes. And if we can weather that, then I think we've got a great chance.
Yeah. And sometimes that suits us. I know away from home, we're quite cagey anyway. We go quite defensive sometimes. Although I do like to see it sort of come out a little bit more. But yeah, like you say, soak up a bit of pressure, hit them on the break, bit of pace up front, and I think I'm pretty confident we get results then.
Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, I think exactly as Guy said, really. I mean, a draw for us
is pretty good, to be honest. I mean, I'd take even a 0-0 draw. Still keeps the distance between us and them the same. But I think if we just believe in ourselves a little bit more sometimes and just play more on the front foot than, like I said before in a couple of other podcasts, isn't it? You know, when we go out to defend, we look vulnerable. When we go out and we play on the front foot, we look a far better side. Better to play in their half than our half, you know?
I live in Southampton, just outside, and so I get all the local paper, etc. And I think I'm pretty confident that, you know, I think they're done now. I think they're concentrating on the semi-final. I think they're done. I think they've gone in the league. They put up half a decent performance against Arsenal the other day, but I think any team that sort of gets amongst them, I can't see them staying up. I've got lots, I wouldn't say mates, who are Southampton fans, obviously playing for Portsmouth, but a lot of people around the area that are Saints fans, and they're pretty much resigned to the fact that they think they're going down. So, fingers crossed. I think they've got Chelsea at the weekend. I think they've got a difficult game. I don't think they've got a great running. So I think, I'm pretty confident that they'll be one of the teams that go down this year, and then it's up to us to make sure that we're not the other one.
Yeah, I think all we need, I know everyone is saying that one more win. I think we might achieve it in draws, you know. Even if we don't win another game, maybe we're going to draw another three games, that'll do it, you know. Steve, do you think we'll miss Davy Proper? And it seems that we've got one of our midfielders back and then we miss another one.
I think we will, because I think it's the same thing where you've got to have somebody. So Kaya's going to come in. He's played, three or four games? It's hard for him to come in and fill the place of somebody who's played every game of the season.
Anyway, that's just about it for the Albion Raw. We've run out of time. Guy, once again, thanks for joining us. Hey, it'll be great to get you on again, and we'll give you a full show because there's plenty we'd like to talk to you about.
Definitely. Nice one. I thoroughly enjoyed it, mate. All the best.
All right, cool. And Steve, thanks for joining us, and please tune in again in a couple of weeks' time. All right, bye for now.